Welcome to MSP 1337. I'm your host, Chris Johnson, a show dedicated to cybersecurity challenges, solutions, a journey together, not alone. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of MSP 1337. I'm joined this week by Matthew Fish of Fort Mesa. Welcome to the show, Matt.
happy to be here at home.
Here at home. So this episode, we're just going to call it IT Nation recap. Obviously, there's lots of things that we could talk about that took place at IT Nation. Like the fact that I went to SeaWorld and you did not. You missed out on the person that, after having lots of food and alcohol, decided to get on a roller coaster and share his experience food-wise and alcohol-wise with the four rows behind him on the ride. So, fun times. I was not on that ride. In fact, I fortunately did not go on any rides because I didn't want to be that person. The things that happen at roller coaster or at theme parks, right? So IT Nation, even though it was not a cybersecurity focused conference, because they do that in June at IT Nation Secure, I found the conference to be strangely a deep conversation about cybersecurity was happening almost all the time, which is great in some respects. I think that that really shows maturity across an industry that no longer is just pushing cybersecurity to the sidelines and saying, oh no, I need a new PSA. That's why I'm here. What was your kind of gut reaction as far as the show? I mean, there's so many things happening and a lot to take in. Did you have an aha moment or?
You know, the crowd was interesting to me. This is my first year as a vendor at this event, right? And the level of care that, I mean, this event was full of decision makers, right? These are people that are managing practices. in many cases, they're the practice owner.
Sure.
And they're genuinely interested in what's next. And what's next right now in our industry is leveling up cyber, right?
So absolutely.
It was in the marketing and sales workshops about cyber. It was in the cyber workshops about cyber, you know,
right.
It was
the opportunity to sell was like, oh, if you're not selling cyber, and I'm like, oh my word, let's please don't say that out loud. But yeah, like that's, you're not wrong. Opportunities abounded. And I had a little bit of a nostalgic regret almost. Maybe regret's not the right word, but as I kind of walked around, I didn't make it through all the tech pavilion with the 160 some vendors inside, and then of course the, I think it was like 20 plus that were outside where Fort Mesa had their your stand-up counter. Kind of reminded me of like going to Lowe's and having the person help me like pick out what cabinets I'm gonna buy. But the vendors that I did talk to, it was interesting because I saw vendors who, not just in cybersecurity, but were helping to solve for things that are either clunky for an MSP, not because of any one product. So like not saying like ConnectWise and their PSA doesn't do something well, therefore I need another product, but more of like MSPs didn't grow up becoming experts at PSA tools or tools in general. We wanted to provide services to our clients to help them keep the lights on so they could do what they do best. And so seeing vendors like MSP CFO, I think it was called. And I'm like, what's that all about? And so as they're explaining to me like how it helps me find things that I wasn't necessarily paying attention to. And so it dawned on me like, half of the vendors in here, whether they use AI and the description of what they do, they're using AI to help enhance the experience for the MSP and their clients. And I'm like, we don't do a very good job often of highlighting that. Now, granted, I don't think anybody needs to say, and we use AI to solve your problems. There was some of that too. But like, if we did that, if we said that out loud, we use AI, how many vendors wouldn't end up getting deals signed? Because like, oh, no, we already made a decision. If it uses AI, if that's one of the ingredients, we're definitely not going to use that product.
Well, I'm in the grudging camp there on the vendor side.
Sure.
We have a little AI component in our product that we don't. Uh-oh. We never label as AI, but it's coming from an industry standard source, right? But it's the EPSS modeling, exploit prediction, right? And so here's this industry thing to target vulnerabilities, right? And if you go on their website, you have to dig a little bit into the white paper to really learn this is a machine learning model, because to them, they are not saying, hey, this is AI. They're saying this is the best way to target vulnerabilities. And oh, by the way, if you actually want to know how it works, click here and you find out it's a machine learning model. But we've got that in our, and we're carrying that torch. We're like, we don't tell people it's AI, right? Because AI, and, you know, I think for the last 6 years, we've been a little disappointed in AI, right?
But, well, I think it's because we call it AI, like AI is the product, instead of, you know, the LLM or, you know, the large language models that are being used to enhance what is being done sort of in an automated fashion. And I think that's really interesting. I mean, like, you could almost call this episode all about, you know, AI, but I think that's, there's a misconceived a misunderstanding as to what does it mean to say AI is being used. We're not talking about, you know, the Skynet and consciousness amongst the AI environments. We're talking about the ability to make decisions based on the logical information being presented. So not creative decisions per se, not making stuff up on the fly. It's predictive is not the same thing as just guessing, right? Like, so if they're predicting something based on the data provided, is a whole lot different than just saying, well, A and B exists, so there must be a whole alphabet.
Well, I don't want to speak for the PSA vendors, but it seems like the PSA vendors, and I'm generalizing here, they've got a lot of data on what happened before someone closed the ticket, right?
Right.
And, you know, that can really help a lot of engineers who are struggling through, oh, I've never seen this before.
Sure.
But the PSA vendor's seen that 1,000 times, right? Right.
You're talking about across MSPs using the product.
It seems like that's it's not just a value add. It seems like that's actually the direction the whole PSA industry seems to be moving in.
I mean, we saw what was the vendor that had that was part of the Pitch It competition. They had the service desk sort of piece that integrated with Teams, and it was kind of like helping through AI to help give some predictive guidance around where to take the request to quickest path to resolution without having the tech having to sort of leave and then go Google, you know, how to come out of, you know, the blue screen of death, infinite death cycle. You know, just, I totally made that up. That was not part of what we saw, but like,
well, no, but we are seeing chat products, right? We got Thread and ChatStyle coming on the scene here to not just bring chat, you know, as this, you know, people are using ChatGPT in their offices, like they don't have to think, they get to talk to the robot. But what we're seeing now is we're seeing something more useful. You know, the clients can come in and ask a question, and ChatGPT can jump in and start to give answers that are maybe useful while an engineer is like looking at things at the same time.
I mean, at the end of the day, isn't it kind of similar in some respects to when you type in search criteria to Google or Bing or any of the search engines, and it gives you a list of what it found? Like, it's not just saying like, I found internet websites, I don't care what you typed in, here's what I found. Like, right? Like, it's using, based on the input that I gave it, it's deciding what to present to me, right? With lots of factors being, you know, pushed on it. And I think that's one of the things I think is so really, really cool about sort of what you said about chatbot. Like, even if it was just telling me, like, would you like to respond to the ticket inside of Teams or Slack? Well, yes, I would, because now I don't have to leave this environment to go log in and authenticate somewhere else just to update status to a ticket. So we're streamlining things. We're making the timeline of communication back and forth much smaller than it has ever been, I think, in the history of the services being performed, and largely why a lot of people are attending this conference was like, how do I make my guys work more efficiently? How do I reduce overhead on the things that are, should be, like, I don't want to say medial tasks, but, you know, some things are kind of trivial, right? Like, it's like, why are we making this harder than it needs to be? And then someone comes out with a product, it's like, well, because I knew nobody else would figure this out, we created this for you, right?
Well, and so I think it can be a little frustrating sometimes if you're stuck talking to a bot, right? But
sure.
From my perspective, what I'm seeing is I'm no longer being kicked into an irrelevant knowledge base and then sitting on hold for 45 minutes waiting for an agent, right? I'm being given relevant responses from a robot that may or may not solve my problem, but right. because it is solving lots of problems, the same number of individuals, you know, same number of engineers inside the service provider can then respond much faster, right? And yeah.
Well, we see it with Amazon all the time, right? If you return a package and it doesn't give you the option to generate the label because it wants you to drop it off at the UPS store, I'm like, well, this is dumb. So I opened a chat, and within like 10 seconds of before talking to anybody, it had narrowed down based on my input to literally like they were going to solve my problem when the agent got on with literally just saying, I just emailed you the link to print your own label. That person yeah. probably did one click and just said, oh, yep, it matches. Click, send, make sure, let's make sure it's the right person with the label.
And we're starting to see those tools, right? I don't know if you, did you look at any of those process automation tools like Roost that were at the show?
Yeah, so I'm actually quite familiar with that. Roost is a good example of taking the programming of writing code to establish true automation that doesn't require the human intervention of pushing the button, right, to make it happen. Like based on event A, the automation is actually triggering what would have otherwise been a manual button push.
Yeah, so I think some good stuff there on the AI front in terms of maybe a little bit useful versus totally a waste of time sure. the last few years. And we're seeing it in the market. And if you haven't looked at some of these automation technologies, you know, we saw some stuff that's really working for service yeah. providers this week.
So we talked about AI and a lot of the stuff we saw with even vendors that aren't in the cybersecurity space helping with efficiencies, which reduces that burden of stress that everybody's facing, which means when those threats come your way, hopefully you have more bandwidth to deal with them and not be distracted because, you know, you got to finish payroll. Let's talk about that a little bit on, you know, our session. We didn't have a huge audience, but I think we had a very captivated audience. And I've been thinking about the questions that came up during our session. And there's one that I really been struggling with to get out of my head, and I wanted your take on it. And the question was, and I'm obviously paraphrasing it because that was Thursday and today is now Monday. The question was, with CMMC and some of the other frameworks that have regulatory requirements attached to them or potential for regulatory requirements, why would I do the Trustmark? And my gut reaction was, based on all of the stuff we've talked about up until this point, which was, it doesn't. It's not a reason. That is not a reason to do or not do the Trustmark. The reason to do the Trustmark has nothing to do with whether or not you should or shouldn't do other frameworks. The premise of the Trustmark is to help you mature in your cybersecurity practice so that things like HIPAA and CMMC and other frameworks that you might find yourself needing to align with is not a starting at zero and trying to figure out how you're going to get your organization to meet those requirements when time is not obviously working in your favor. But since that point, I love your take. I have a whole lot more in my head now than I did as to why not just the Trustmark, but CIS, 800-171, CMMC or not, I don't necessarily care in the context of this. They are extremely important and valid for at least one of them to be part of your focused initiative as an organization. And maybe you've got some ideas on this as well.
Well, so I always go back to the reasonable person test here. So I was on...
I'm not that.
Okay, so I was on a demo call this morning.
Okay.
I had some service providers. They were both in Texas. And, you know, I try to give relevant examples, you know, when I'm talking to partners. And in Texas, there are some cyber laws, but largely it's a state that doesn't have vertical regulations.
Okay.
But they have a liability framework, and that's what's here in the US, you know, which is if you screw up, right?
Yeah.
You're going to get stuck with the bill, you're going to get sued, and if it's not from your client, it's going to be from the insurer or from their client, right? Someone's going to pay you with the liability.
Somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you can prove, oh, I wasn't negligent, I did everything reasonable within my power, right? And reasonable is key, right? And it changes from day to day. But basically, the reasonable person test, this is in U.S. law. If you took the steps that a reasonable person in your position would take,
yeah,
that someone else in your chair, different company, doing the same thing, thought it was reasonable. If you took those steps, or they thought that what you took was reasonable, right? You're not going to be held liable in the same way. You're not going to be negligent. So,
well, I was just going to say, this is like the opposite side of that coin, is ignorance and negligence are no longer accepted practice. And so, while it may not be easy to prove whether or not someone was negligent, it's far easier to prove reasonable, right? Like, you can see the efforts were made is a whole lot different than going, well, based on what I have from an evidence standpoint, the lack thereof, and based on what has happened, I have come to my own reasonable conclusion that says you did not do anything to prevent this from happening.
Yeah. So I think as a service provider, it can prove you did the reasonable thing in just about any scenario.
Because you are aligning with a framework, right?
Because you're aligning with a framework, but you also sought outside assessment.
Yes.
How you're doing, right?
Yes.
You implemented a framework, and then you said to an outside party, how did I do, right?
Right.
And that's the reasonable thing. And if you're doing that, not only have you protected yourself, but if a client said, why should I trust you? You have reasonable legs to stand on.
Right, right. So, and I think that's, Mike Simmel mentioned some of those things, right? Dave Alton as well. Like, you know, why do this and why now? So I just cherry picked that one because obviously I was in that session. And you know, since we presented it, like, that's easy one to talk about for this show. What were some of your other takeaways just in general, like talking to people? I mean, I ran into the MSP that I sold to. I ran into a large part of their leadership team. It was good to have a minute or two to talk. There were a lot of people there that I haven't seen in 6-7 years, which was, you know, in a crowd of 4,500 to run into people that, you know, it was definitely exciting to see that, you know, we're all coming together, not just to see what's new, but also to network with those that are important to our success in the industry. So were there other, like, just random things that you ran into that were like, need to put that one in my hat? Maybe literally, because I saw some buttons.
Yeah, I had some stuff on the hat.
There has stuff on the hat.
So I'm comparing to pre-COVID, right? Last year there was an IT Nation, but it was not at its pre-COVID levels, right? This is
that
really
the hurricane didn't help.
The hurricane didn't help as well. No. Some people had some canceled travel. And really, you would, even if you were local, you would have been crazy to drive through that storm. But
right.
Yeah. So in fact, I think the governor said, like, don't drive. But the reality, this is the first time that this community has gotten together, you know, in a while, right?
Right.
And I saw something different. Before COVID, even if we compare to last year, we've seen movement. But before COVID, largely people said to themselves, I don't need to care about this. Or they would say, why do I need to care about this? And very few service providers that I talked to said to me, and we're supporting cyber gap assessments. Very few of them said, this sounds irrelevant. The vast majority of service providers think today, I should be doing gap assessments on all of my clients, and we should be putting them in security plans, and we should be doing security things. And maybe they have different levels of acceptance in terms of what security things they should be doing.
Right.
Very few service providers said to me, why should I care about assessing cyber for my clients? That's actually, it's really different. You know, if we rewound 18 months, just 18 months,
yeah,
I would say it was a small minority of service providers that said, I should be doing, or I am doing, cyber gap assessments for my clients. And now it's the complete opposite. I would say only one out of five or 1 out of 10 say, why should I care about this? Because the other 4 out of 5 or 9 out of 10 are saying, oh, I get it. I get it. Now I need tools, or now I need time in my life. And I don't need to be, no one needs to explain to me why I need to be doing this. And that is that is hugely impactful to what we are doing as cyber professionals.
I think that's a great observation. I think 18 months is potentially even a long time. So my role at CompTIA, I think I'm right around a year and a half, not quite. That's like a year and 3 months. I look back at the first event that I presented any sort of cybersecurity maturity, anything. And so that would put me back around ChannelCon of 22. So basically two events ago. I look at June of this year, IT Nation Secure, and the conversations that we had there. And one of the things that I've noticed is a pattern in the maturity of the conversation. So to your point, 18 months ago, maybe really weren't talking about it in the context of I need to be doing these things and I'm going to get started on it now. Those that were starting on it actually weren't having good maturity conversations. They were just saying these are things I need to do. They weren't even necessarily an acceptance of what it looks like when you're measuring KPIs to say, is what I'm doing successful? Am I making an impactful change both to my organization and to that of my clients? And I think we're starting to see evidence to support that. You see the threat surface, the threat landscape, where the attacks are happening. They're largely not areas that are served by service providers. Not to say that they aren't happening there, but what's plaguing the news right now is, you know, K-12 is still high on the list. Healthcare is still high on the list. Government agencies. Well, off the top of my head, all three of those are not popular places for solution providers, at least not in, as a general, you know, being broad brush here. The conversations that I had at IT Nations Connect this last week, I heard people say things that I never would have imagined to hear come out of an MSP's mouth. And that was, we've made the following changes. We're reevaluating our tech stack, not because we don't like our tech stack, but we know we have gaps and inefficiencies around how we're approaching cybersecurity. These were not MSPs going, hey, we've come to the conclusion that for us to be successful, we have to become an MSSP. I did not hear that one time. And I think if we went back 18 months, you would have heard a lot of buzz around how to move your MSP to become an MSSP. Go back 3 years, and that was all anybody talked about. It was like, once we had MSPs, right? Or once we had break fix, you need to be an MSP. Well, in the last 6 years, I met a company that would define themselves as an MSP that is entirely break fix. But when I saw their numbers and I saw how they were approaching the way in which they do it, I have a hard time saying that they are not doing a successful managed services to their clients with a break fix model that is actually making the money hand over fist. And funny enough, they actually allow you to prepay for a block of hours, where if you buy a whole year's worth of hours, they give you a 10% discount on hourly rates. And I'm like, how do you get, I didn't even want to go there.
So
like,
what? Okay. So ConnectWise is on the other side of this curve too. You know, they've given up on the MSP label, right? They're TSPs, recognizing that fully managed is not the destination for everyone.
Well, and let's clarify what TSP, technology service providers, right? So like you basically, we're broadening the platform or those who would use this product. So it doesn't say copier guys. I think they said not that one, but like telecommunications is, I think the reality is professional services automation has hit a level of maturity that's unprecedented. And for us to see new vendors come into the space, it's because they see areas that have gaps in the current players in the space, right? Like there's areas where there's now new technology service providers that are coming to market, and the PSAs of old have holes. And I don't mean holes in their product being good or bad, but more of like, they're just not areas that they focus the product on. And so you put that into play with what we're seeing. This is no different than having a conversation about a GRC tool, right? Or platform or risk registers or any number of things that 5 years ago would not even been an intelligent conversation with most solution providers, because we would still be working through the first 30 to 45 minutes of our, you know, drinks at the bar, trying to explain what those things even are. And I think unfortunate that it took this long. I think it was twofold. One, the maturity of platforms in the space being better than an Excel spreadsheet took a long time, perhaps too long, for products to be affordable in the MSP space, right? Like, so we've had high-end enterprise level products for a decade plus that if you knew what you wanted the tool to do, you could essentially mold it into the shape you wanted it. And the vendors would help you because you were writing pretty significant checks. But we still didn't understand in the MSP space the value of that to influence those vendors. It wasn't until some who had figured it out started creating GRC platforms for this industry to make that change that says, hey, the real dollar value or the real value of your business to your clients is not how quickly you can stand up another seat of 365. It is how well can you protect my data? Can you prove that you're protecting my data? And that at a point that you're not putting me in a position where, because it's so protected, I actually can't do my job anymore. And they really want to sit down and understand, like, hey, they might not use the word risk in the conversation, but clients genuinely want to know, am I protected? And how is it going to work if something happens? Because they're no longer saying, I assume I'm protected and everything's going to be good. They're saying, I know our environment isn't perfect. What can we do to ensure the least amount of damage is done when the bad things do happen? And I think we're, for the first time, perhaps in 10 plus years, those are the types of conversations that are starting to emerge on more than just a one-off.
Well, I know anecdotally when I'm talking to service providers last week, the things they're scared about that are keeping them up at night are not, it's not like a crypto locker aware on the endpoint anymore, right? They want to know that their client's safe holistically. And the reason why is the most common attack I'm hearing about is their Office 365 account got hacked, right? And the clients know this too. The clients know that someone in their company, their email got hacked. And that has nothing to do with or spoofed. Yeah, I mean, there's different versions of that attack, right? Having the email, having an email incident, but it's something that is happening to clients, and it's broadly on a lot of providers. They're seeing it too much, and so they are looking for more holistic. How do we protect the whole client? You know, instead of just how do we install this agent?
Yeah, and I don't generally defend any vendor, and so don't take this as me suddenly deciding to defend Microsoft. But along those lines, I noticed something interesting too that we were dealing with all of a sudden mail that is important, like my Uber receipts, as an example, were now getting flagged by quarantine. So in the last, 30 to 90 days, there's been a huge uptick in spam, malicious emails, not just spam, but like malicious emails in that category that I don't care who your filtering company is, Microsoft or otherwise, IT service providers are actually having to go in and enhance and increase the strictness to those policies to the point where, I used to pretty much ignore quarantine, and now I'm actually having to go into quarantine and make decisions around, is this a legitimate email? Am I sure it's a legitimate email so that I can whitelist either the sender or at least the email that was sent to me?
Yeah, it's the year of DMARC. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I did not know it was the year of DMARC. I assume that's not on the placemat at the Chinese restaurant.
It's well, it was on the trade show floor. We had some DMARC vendors.
Yes, we did.
And this is to stop email spoofing, right? It's a protocol to make sure that that if you're sending mail, no one's pretending to be you, right? And we're enforcing it, because we've had tools for many years to sort of
validate, weakly
indicate to a receiver, hey, there may be an indicator here. If you haven't seen mail from these servers that are signed or on a clear list, you might want to think twice about letting those into the inbox. Maybe they should go into quarantine. But now this year, what I've seen anecdotally is we've got half of companies now that are on the other side of DMARC enforcement, and service providers this year are having to figure that out. Right?
How many SPF records have you looked at where it's like they got the domain in there, but then at the end it says tilde all, and you're like, so right, we just defeated this really doing a whole lot for you.
Well, we can't do that anymore with DMARC, right?
That's true. So, but I mean, like going back in time pre DMARC, right? So now DMARC, I think taking DMARC one step further, isn't just authenticating that I am who I say I am sending out. But what about mail that's coming from someone in your company to someone else in your company that essentially, if you don't have DMARC policy enforcement turned on, you don't know where that mail came from. It could literally be, you know, Joe's garage has a mail server that they stood up and they put your domain on it.
Yep. So I that's happening right now.
Yeah.
And it's DMARC. First of all, it's a pain in the butt to set up. So if you do this for a bunch of clients, you probably do want a tool. You know, I've done it manually and I've done it with tools. I will tell you tracking down exceptions and figuring out how to, you really probably.
And recursions. Recursions can be your infinite nightmare too, because you don't necessarily see that validating through certain tools, but you go and use another tool and it's like, oh my word, that's why we are taking so long to have mail going through. It's looping. And I think it's after 10 loops, it may just exit.
Oh yeah, you can't do more than that. Yeah.
So that's why there's tools out there that solve for that too, right? Like your DMartians and Valimail, and there's others, but those are just ones that came to my up top of mind. So we kind of went in a couple different squirrel tangents, all loosely tied to our time last week at IT Nation Connect. Obviously, there were some great networking opportunities. I definitely shot a few Nerf guns. I got shot in the mouth. It made my lips sting a little bit. So I don't know if there was some, like, maybe I'm allergic to latex and that was in the Nerf ball. I digress. Any last tidbits of why, you know, IT Nation Connect was valuable? I mean, obviously we saw amazing things come out of, like, you know, partnerships with Microsoft and other things that are of value to not just those who partner with ConnectWise, but just sort of in general, like changes that are happening in our industry that are positively impacting where we're going.
I mean, I think overall, and this is for whether you were at the event or not, right?
Yeah.
It's good seeing from established vendors, hey, this is what we are doing new this year, right? That's great. The other thing that's really important, particularly for service providers, is, hey, these are the new things. These are the new vendors with new solutions. And even if you're not going to buy from that vendor, understanding what those new things are.
Yeah. Right? Like what's changing in our industry that merits a new category that you've never heard of before.
So it's 166 vendors. Go look at the vendor list.
Right. We're right.
If you don't know what some of those brands are, maybe click on them.
Yeah.
The robotic process automation stuff.
Absolutely.
It's been around a few years, but it's like on a whole nother level these days. We're seeing some interesting IAM solutions for protecting identities. It goes well beyond MFA.
Right.
And you know, we're in the security planning space, compliance planning space, and there's some vendors that are doing that as well. It's all new stuff.
Yeah, that's another word that's kind of new, right? We used to say compliance and we used it in the term defining what our clients were going through. But now we're starting to see the necessity around solution providers and being compliant with and fill in the blank. Wow, a lot to chew on. It was definitely a good trip. I learned a lot. I think there was more education sessions that were happening in parallel to the education sessions that I got to go to that I'm sure I missed far more than I saw. But for those of you that were there, I know you can relate to this. For those that you weren't, I would at least go check out the IT Nation website and cruise some of those vendor sponsors, because it'll definitely give you some ideas around categories of cybersecurity services that you maybe haven't considered before. And with that, this has been an episode of MSP 1337. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.